This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let's get into this one. I promised you this conversation last week. I think it was Thursday or Wednesday or so. And this is regarding medical aid schemes, your medical aid. Have you ever asked yourself, to what extent of cover and for what purpose are you getting? Whether we've got comprehensive cover or you've got some kind of a savings cover and the like. But if I had to ask you, are you 100% certain that upon you contracting some kind of an illness, that your medical aid will cover all of your expenses and your medical bills? What would you say? Would you say with absolute certainty that you know what your medical aid will cover you for or will not cover you for? That is the conversation we're getting into this afternoon, because you see, there are various reports that have come out about how medical aids are not covering some rare diseases. Now, if medical aids are supposed to cover, and we're going to find out what are they supposed to actually cover? Why is it that we're not finding them cover rare diseases? What was the point of getting medical aid if you know that if you, upon contraction, or is it just covering an accident? That is what we're getting into. And you know, when it comes to South Africa in terms of the healthcare system, so South Africa's two-tiered and highly unequal healthcare system has got such that the public sector, which is state-funded and caters to the majority of the population, about 71% of the population is catered by public healthcare, whereas you find only 27% of the population is catered by private healthcare. This is done through medical aid schemes or health insurance and serves, as I said, 27% of the population, whereas the public sector is underfunded, while most South Africans can't afford the exorbitant cost of private care. So we've got the likes of the National Health Insurance Schemes and to just almost try to mitigate against how 27% of the population is being serviced by private healthcare. But we all know that that is still a conversation that is ongoing. As of 2018, only 16.4% of all individuals in South Africa were members of medical aid schemes. However, when comparing membership rates of population group, it basically says it's covering by, or the covers by medical schemes were not noticeably higher amongst white individuals, which is at 72.9%, black and Indians 52%, and others about 17%. Black Africans 9.9%. Let me help you out again. When you're looking at it, right, in terms of who is a member of a medical aid scheme, we've got white people, 72.9% are covered by medical aid. Indians and Asians, 52% are covered by medical aid. Coloureds, 17% are covered by medical aid. Black Africans, 9.9%. Whereas we make up the majority of the population. So upon this premise, we kick off this conversation this afternoon. And as I asked you before, do you know what you're covered for in your medical aid scheme? Can you unequivocally say, I know that I'm going to get cover for this? And I'll repeat that last stat again, because this one, I think, touches deep. Only 9.9% of Black Africans are covered by medical aid in a country where 80% of South Africans are Black Africans. Let me welcome my guests into this conversation now to talk about it. Can I just say this before we start? We extended an invitation to the Medical Scheme Council of South Africa, to which we're still waiting for a response. Still waiting. But it does not mean the conversation does not happen, doesn't it? So we are with this afternoon, Mshani Devet, who is Zachariah's mother, who is our conversationist today. And we're going to speak about Zachary's story. And we're going to get to understand it from the source's perspective. Shani, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Hi, Faith. Thank you for having me today.
And we've also got Kelly Duplessis, who is the founder and the CEO of patient advocacy group Rare Diseases South Africa. Kelly, welcome back. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thanks so much, Faith.
We've also got Aluwani Menenze, who's the president of ATASA, joining us this afternoon as well. Thank you so much, Aluwani. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you very much, Faith. I appreciate it.
Kelly, we had resumed our conversation, and as I made a promise last week about how we need to take this matter forward, because we cannot be sitting in a South African population which is already experiencing the inequalities that exist within private and public healthcare of about 27% to 71%, and the different demographical breakings of it, and think that that's okay. Understanding medical aid becomes a foundational premise from which we can actually have this conversation. If I apply for my medical aid, or to actually have medical aid, what does medical aid actually cover for in general?
So I think that that's it's quite a complex question. And I think what's important to to be determined is there's certain benefits that are fixed benefits that are placed regardless of what plan you are on, what your contribution is, etc. And then there's certain things that are like this.
Ooh, Kelly, I've lost you. I've lost you for a second. I'm going to try to get you back. Aluwani, maybe you can also extend your assistance with us just to help us unpack how does medical aid actually work?
Basically, with medical aid, you have your hospital benefits and out-of-hospital benefits. And all these will actually be determined in detail in terms of what is covered, what is not covered. There will also be the amounts for which you're covered. So if you look at most of the hospital plans, they will say 100% cover. Mm. So what is important is to know for everything else, what is your cover? So it may be in terms of medical bills, it will be in terms of rehabilitation, it will be in terms of getting your medication. So all the services will be covered. And maybe what is important to mention from our perspective as occupational therapy is that there are conditions, like you said earlier, that are not covered. And usually members of medical aid schemes will find out when they're already ill. Mm. So it is important that you actually have this conversation with your medical aid as to what is covered, and make yourself or acquaint yourself with the details. You know, they always say the devil is in the detail. That detail is what makes a difference when you get sick.
Yeah. You know, Aluwani, when you're saying it's hospital benefits, out-of-hospital benefits, medication. So I'm going to, as you guys are speaking, just so that we don't forget, medication also being covered. But again, as you mentioned, that the devil is in the detail. I want us to see how we can get into those details as well with Kelly. We seem to be struggling to get her back. But so you almost have to have this conversation with your medical aid about when you say hospital benefits, what about the hospital benefits are you covering me for? Are you covering me for just the bed? Or are you covering me for the full services? Is it that important nowadays, Aluwani, that we get into even when I'm in hospital, what am I getting for having this kind of medical aid? Or if I'm a patient that is ill and I'm out of hospital, what exactly am I getting, and to what extent?
It is, Faith. But look, you do not have the type of information to ask those questions. So if somebody says your whole all your medical bills are covered, you take it and you trust them at their word. And the other important thing is that you have to get to know what needs to be pre-authorized. And medical aids are very fair. They will say for this, that, and the other thing, before we fund it, we need the following things. And what we do as health professionals is request for a pre-authorization. And that pre-authorization process, you need to understand what it entails, who is responsible for it, and you will find that that is when people get very frustrated. The other frustration in terms of what is covered and what is not covered, whether in hospital, out of hospital, in ICU or in theater, it is important that you also understand what your medical aid covers. And the reason is that when you do not know, and like the conversation we had last week, as a professional, I know what you need, but will your medical aid cover it? And if your medical aid doesn't cover it, who then covers it? And I think that is the difficult conversation that health professionals in the private sector are having to have with their clients. And at the same time, you're saving a life, but you really need to know if this medical aid will pay for that particular procedure that you're doing. So on the flip side, it is exactly the same as what the public sector health professionals are experiencing.
I want us to get into, and we are going to get into the devil that is the detail, right? And just figure out, do you know, and that's why I asked the question earlier, and I'll take your calls after this, but if I have to ask you, do you know what you are covered for on your medical aid? Can you be 100% certain that in the event of an illness or a disease and you need to get yourself medical care, that based on your payments that you're making every month, that medical aid will actually cover you? Are you certain? Kelly, we found a clearer signal for you, and I thank you for that. And we kicked off and launched it with Aluwani regarding exactly how does medical aid work in terms of hospital benefits, out of hospital, medical medication bills and the like. And, you know, where comprehensive cover comes in, whereas your savings covers comes in. But are medical aids usually specific that we cover these illnesses and no more?
Yes, I think that they are. I think that this is where, you know, brokers have a very, very important part to play in terms of informing medical aid and medical, you know, prospective medical aid members on what they are purchasing when they sign up for medical aid. But I think that this is, you know, this is where the issues coming in for us in particular, is that very often the conditions that we have issues with in terms of getting reimbursement are things that are principally meant to be covered by the medical schemes. Mm. It is not, you know, it's not, understandably, there's different protocols, formularies, et cetera, that need to be applied, and all of those things are taken and they're well understood. However, what we find is that medical aids, when it comes to innovative products, and innovative, which are often targeted therapies, newly researched therapies that are focused, that are developed specifically for a small set of people, those products, even though the disease should be covered in full and the access to those products should be readily available, we are finding that the medical schemes are not coming to look on those particular issues. And I think that that's where the frustration comes in for a medical aid member, is that when you join a scheme, you don't join a medical aid because you're going to get flu in winter. We all know that we're going to have to, you know, buy some vitamin C, et cetera, during winter time, and you're comfortable with that. You join medical aid for car accidents, for the unnecessary, you know, things that you don't necessarily plan for, and for these debilitating chronic illnesses. So you anticipate that you would get the relevant amount of cover when it comes to claiming for those things. And that's where we're seeing we're battling in terms of accessibility.
Yeah. You know, Kelly, so if I have to be very simple about it, let's say hypothetically speaking, and we're going to speak to Mishani in just a moment, that somebody's a cancer patient, right? As a cancer patient, there's an expectation, already an assumption, that I am going to be covered to the fullest extent for my medical care, for any surgeries that I need to do, for any hospital stay that I need to embark on, any, you know, and medication and the like. But let's say a new kind of therapy is introduced for the very same purpose of helping me with the cancer. Does that mean that there's still an open kind of, you know, conversation around whether medical aid will cover that or not?
So this is where it becomes quite difficult. In your opinion, and I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put it back to you, Faith, and ask you this. Which, are you more comfortable with your medical professional making the decision with regards to what you should be treated with or with your medical aid? Because as it stands at the moment, a lot of these decisions, the default is actually the power of that decision is actually removed from the clinician who you are relying on to make you better.
Mm.
And it is placed, the power of that decision making is placed in your medical aid membership. And their scheme rules and protocols. And, we have sometimes medical schemes and administrators making decisions around complex cases without ever having laid eyes on the patient.
Sure. I want to invite you with this, Mushaini Devet. And is it Zachariah or Zachary's mother? Mushaini, is your son Zachariah or Zachary?
Zachary.
All right. So, Mushaini, can you just tell us a little bit about your story, Zachary? Because, I mean, Zachary was born, what, in 2019 or so? So it's about just turned three?
Yes, yeah. So he was born in March 2019.
Okay.
Happy, healthy. We had no sort of issues with him. He eventually started having some recurring infections, ear and sinus infections. And he was struggling to sleep. So we just put that down to, obviously often babies have recurring ear infections. You just do the normal grommets and, go see your ENT and those kind of things. And just put his sleep off to, he'll eventually get there. A lot of babies like don't sleep for the first year or two and then eventually it just kicks in. So we went to see our ENT for his checkups and so forth. And the ENT had said, look, he sees like really strange facial features within Zach's appearance. And he'd like us to keep an open mind in terms of a condition called mucopolysaccharidosis. And he said, let's keep an eye on it and, but let's just be aware of it. Zach was about 9 months old, I think. He had his first set of grommets. Then we went back a few times, and within a year, he had a second set of grommets, at which point the doctor had said, look, he's still convinced that something is not right. And that was just because of his facial features. And he had us go to the pediatrician, and we underwent a whole bunch of testing. And within 2 months after that, so before... just after Zach's second birthday, he was formally diagnosed with mucopolysaccharidosis type 2.
Sure. What is that, Shani?
So there is an enzyme that his body does not create. And because of this, his body doesn't break down certain proteins and sugars, which essentially build your different tissues and muscles and those kind of things within your body. So essentially what happens is that those tissues just end up accumulating within his body, on his organs, on his joints, on his muscles, on his brain eventually. And as a result of that, his body feels that strain. So his organs will eventually, because of that, start shutting down. His brain function will deteriorate, at which point he'll lose abilities like eating and talking and walking, and eventually just unfortunately just that will cause his death. Kids with his disease generally have a life expectancy of 10 to 18 years, dependent on how rapidly the disease progresses. Mm-hmm. With our treatment.
Mm-hmm.
We're very fortunate that we were diagnosed at the age of two, because we can get ahead of the extensive deterioration. But unfortunately, our medical aid is refusing to pay for his treatment, even under the PMB sort of laws or things that has to be, paid for. So we are struggling because in the last year, Zachary went from having like a thickened heart valve to having two leaking heart valves. His liver is about 14 centimeter enlarged.
Sure.
He does not sleep, which is unfortunately part of his MPS. It's part of his condition.
He doesn't sleep.
So he sleeps about, he wakes up about anywhere between 8 and 15 times a night.
Sure.
And he can wake up some nights and be awake for 4 hours at a time and just not sleep. So it's rough. you know, like I say, you as a new parent or as a parent of a small one, you usually just expect it to eventually blow over and eventually they'll sleep through the night. And Zachary just has never slept through a night in his 3 and a bit years, so and probably never will.
And we're going to talk a little bit further about this. And as I said, thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing Zachary's story, because it just lands it that much more poignantly. I mean, so you're saying medical aid is refusing to pay, and you guys have been a medical aid member or the member of your medical aid scheme for how many years?
So we've actually been with our medical scheme with MediHelp for since 2014. So my children were both born onto the medical aid. It's mm-hmm. not like we joined thinking, you know, going, you know, he's got this disease, let's quickly get medical aid. You mm-hmm. know, we've been paying for medical aid for many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of cover do you have? Is it like a comprehensive cover or?
So we do have a sort of a hospital plan with additional benefits. Mm-hmm. So it's not your average hospital plan, but it's not a full medical aid package. But under that package, we are still covered for PMB conditions as prescribed by the medical board.
We'll get into this. We'll get more information around this. And as I said, I'll take your calls on 0861-987-000. If I had to ask you, do you know what your medical aid scheme actually covers you for? Can you say yes with confidence? We'll get into this after the news. It's 1:30.
Call Faith on 0861-987-000.
It's 25 minutes to go before the top of the hour. Yes, let's take your calls. We're talking here about medical aid as well as the reports that they're alleging to withhold care to certain to patients, right, with certain illnesses, even though covered by the PMB, that is, of course, the prescribed minimum benefits. Maybe, Aluwani, before I go to the phone lines, you can just explain to us in terms of exactly the prescribed minimum benefits for medical aid schemes, exactly. How does it work? Because when you're listening to Mashani's story regarding her son, she was supposed to have received cover for this, which they said it did, but yet the medical aid is refusing to give any form of assistance.
Okay, I think I will not mention why the medical aid would have refused, but they do give us a lot of reasons. The primary medical benefit is a list of conditions and what is covered, and also where it needs to be received. Mm. And in terms of the primary, and these are the primary, so these are the most basic services that a healthcare needs to give. So the medical aids will take the primary medical benefits and actually use those to cover you. So what usually happens is that there are certain conditions that are not there and certain aspects of treatment that may not be on their primary medical benefits. And I think it would be a good thing if at some point you have a discussion with the Council of Medical Schemes as to the exclusion criteria, like in the case of Zachariah. I will give you another very practical thing.
Yeah. Just on that note, Wena Aluwani, we tried to get them involved in this conversation, and so far they've blue-ticked us. So we have not received a response from them as yet. So that's where we are. But we have to have this conversation, though, irrespective of, because of the nature and the severity that it's in, which I cannot imagine how many people are walking around thinking that they're fully covered for any, in case of an illness or emergency, only to find out that they're actually not covered.
And the reality is that if you think you're covered, you don't make any other provision. So families are either going into debt because now the child is sick or the adult is sick and they're in the hospital, mm. and you need to be addressing this bill. Secondly, you either have debt, or you now have people who are now moving to the public sector to get the same treatment. And that clogs the public sector as well. When we discussed last week, the doctors and myself were discussing how bad the situation is. So if your medical aid doesn't cover you and you need an occupational therapist, the next best thing that you can do is go to the nearest public hospital. And, you know, the morality of that and what is covered as well, it's usually not covered adequately. Mm. Like I gave an example, if somebody has a stroke, it will usually take us 18 to 36 months to rehabilitate them. And you need to be able to check if the number of sessions that you're covered for will be adequate for the illness that you have. So in essence, we need to really look at the social justice in terms of access to health care and what people believe they have in relation to what they're actually covered for.
And we're going to get into it. I've got patients, Mulepo, saying the medical aid scheme conversation is so necessary. You can go through the T's and C's thoroughly, but will always be hit with a surprise when claiming. Honestly, I feel like it is medical aid schemes versus medical practitioners. And sadly, patients are caught in between with no influence. Paula saying, Faye, thanks for emphasizing the stats about medical aid cover. And people will not be treating the inequality that we have in South Africa as a pandemic. And it is evil. How can 80% of the population only have 9% having the privilege of quality healthcare? If you're wondering what is Paula saying, I mentioned earlier on, and I'm going to repeat it because it needs just to be anchored, and it just makes that much more of a poignant point. Did you know that as of 2018, 16.4% of all individuals in South Africa were members of medical aid schemes? Now we're saying that we've got about 27 or so percent of it. However, when comparing membership rates by population group, covers by medical aid schemes were noticeably higher amongst white individuals. 72.9% of white people are covered by medical aid schemes. Indians and Asians, 52%. Colored, 17.1%. Black Africans, 9.9%. Let's go to the phone lines now. Khomotso in Mut. Hello, Mama. Always a pleasure speaking to you.
Hi, Faith. And thank you for continuing this conversation. I don't know if you recall, you had it late last year with the administrator. Mm-hmm. And I have to agree with you. Yes, it's not even a social justice. Like, it is highly unethical. It is, you know, the majority of us go into medical aid because you want some level of protection. I, for one, am at a point where I'm paying, I'm sure, the second highest option. You will recall I got the boys with autism, and so like your previous guest, you know, you have a child born into this medical aid with a condition that you don't know. And by the way, having consulted with doctors, whatever, you're also learning and you're paying this money is getting out of your account. I hardly go to the doctor ever, but now I have this condition. I'm not a doctor, right? What is prescribed is all the things that I need, and they'll tell you that no, we don't change or get the administrator when they're going to change the medical benefits. And you will recall the lady who used to be chair of SAMA saying to you last year that even that is so twisted, because it's not like they have a primary health care focus. Now it's really around specialists and things, you know. So even as I'm calling you now, I feel so bad, because if you're saying out of the blacks, we are part of the 9%, but we are also dying, because now what must happen? I'm paying you every month. Like, I don't even get my salary before my medical aid gets it, right?
Yeah.
And it's almost like there is a penalty to it. These conditions, also, like when you talk climate change and changing conditions, they're changing as we're going along. So I would really want to know how they identify the primary medical benefit. When do they do it? Who do they consult? What do we do? Because your guest is right. I end up going to Steve Biko, which has an amazing pediatric neurology section. But I'm taking away from somebody else by going there. But when I go to the specialist, number one, they don't want to take medical aid. Or if they do, I must still pay, you know, a whole lot more over it. I know.
I know. But we need to talk about it, right? If it's going to change, it starts off with conversations like this, and it starts off by people being aware about the type of cover that they're covered for or not covered for in that aspect. Buyi in Randburg, hi.
Hi, Faye. Thank you for the great conversation. This topic, the medical aid, is very close to my heart because I discovered kangwanaka gore o na le condition e le gore most of the people do not know. Ba bona bana normally collocation re bitsa batho ba ba hlotsa dijomo ba bona. And it's the best condition where your skull closes mogare or any part of the skull mo e kwalegang teng. And then so what they did, pediatrician realized it ha ke mo isa for 12 months gore no, the brain is not growing. I mean, the head is not growing. Yeah, fukutega because it pushes a kopele lukomurah, but the circumference yeah fukuteg. And then when we took him for MRI scan, batola koro no huko alichile mukarimo. So we had to go and do the op, and waziba runaba chabantu with the op. Yeah, shaho he uska chola mwana and all that. Kind of those are the things. Selokori, we need education moba chabantu, but lady medical aid must be part because I end up paying. Kine ke top up most of the money yangwana because that is a bet. Best condition that we don't know. Even most of the people like Babon monitoring in, do you know how this head can be fixed? They will say, I'm the Kakotes on Aditwailehi. So there are conditions that we still have to be exposed to, especially black people.
Sure. And will you just to understand around how, what kind of cover is your child getting? Is your child, or the child is not getting any form of cover?
The cover, but. Hospital to top up. First thing, the doctors are bana say baba rubatan. Baba rubatan ki the specialist akef. So medical aid will tell you that it's off your limit. So I end up kore ki patetic. I had to make an arrangement with the doctor. Kine ki mo patala 1.5. I think kine ki mo kolota about 10,000. So kine ki patala 1,005 every month because medical aid couldn't pay all the bills that the doctor. Yeah. And then leading neurologist, lebo mama, kid specialist. So, I mean, if ever ke patala medical aid, na I get really this condition, and I don't know when they go. So, I mean, should I lose my baby just because medical aid? I have to patala ki settle for whatever thing for doctor or available while they are specialists. O patala medical aid so that you can get the best care that is possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I think it's more of education, medical aid. When coming to Runaba Trabans, is we are disadvantaged because they don't educate us. We just take the covers, and then even if you ask them, do you know this condition? Babota, what is this condition? You understand? Now when you just expose it, I had to make a research about the condition of my son. And most of the papers that I read, it was from USA. Even in South Africa today, even the group that we have for women, I mean for the mothers or the parents with the babies are craniosynostosis. You're not ill. So it's, I think I'm the only black, or we are two in that group. So people do not know that. When you look at the head of the child, it's for another topic. You can find the condition hold. That because of the closure of the skull too quickly, it delays the delay. It delays the growth of the brain. The brain pressure, the chrono circulator, hand. So those are the things that Santi Bari to take us on.
I hear you. I'm going to run, Mama, but your point has been really made. Alwani, I just, you know, simply put, I don't understand on many of fronts, you know. When people take up medical aid, you literally hear the consultant, and I've gone through this process, as amongst, I think, thousands of us have gone through this process. You have the consultant on the other side. They give you about three or four tiers in terms of options that you need to choose. You ask them what is involved in those, in that cover. They give you, you know, but it looks as though we are not researching enough, even as people, especially because even with our medical aid and the premiums that we're paying monthly, some of us still have to take children or even take ourselves to public health care because what you thought was part of the deal clearly is no longer part of the deal. And unless you do the research, we can't expect the medical aid schemes as well to do the research on our behalf, because the truth of the matter is it's a business, isn't it? It's a business.
It is. There are two things that I want to pick up from what was said earlier. The problem with medical aids is the authorization, which I mentioned, and the fact that as a health professional, I know what this child needs, and the parent has paid the dues, but it does not allow me, the medical aid does not allow me to be able to do what I know I should be doing. And both parents mentioned two things that are very particular to occupational therapy, and I want to mention them because even if you do research, you need to also look at the impact of the illness. For the one child, for Zachariah, it was he does not sleep, and therefore it is going to affect his schooling. And the later speaker mentioned schooling and performance at school. And all these things are included in the primary care in the primary care benefits and the ICD-10. And when the medical aid does not pay for them, it affects the whole family system. So in thinking about it, I'm not too sure if it is research that we need, but it is more understanding what the cover that you have is. Because even if you read about it, you don't know your genetics and you don't know what will come up. So there are two things that I would recommend is understand what your benefits are and understand what history you have in your family. Because when you know the history and when you come in for a consultation, we will always ask, does anybody in your family have this condition? When you know your history, you actually become alert to ask, if we have schizophrenia in our family, does this medical aid cover this type of conditions? We have children with small heads in our family and intellectual disability. Does it cover? Because we will always find out as and when we need. But the important thing is if we could take back the decision around what is the best care to the health worker, then the people would get value for money. But for as long as I have to wait for authorization and be told to use an alternative, it compromises the best that I can give you as a client. So it is honestly a huge, huge discussion that we need to have. I want to reemphasize, we need our medical aids to move from covering hospital care to covering home-based care, to covering what needs to be done for a child to be successful at school, and primary health care. I mean, so many people will tell you, by June, my consultations were done. And what happens to you for the other half of the year? You know, and professionals are beginning to protect themselves by saying you must pay first. And that doesn't work for many people. We just don't have that type of cash lying around. So I am happy that we're having this conversation, and we need to go deeper into it in terms of what is the impact? What is the impact on the economy? What is the impact on the family systems when medical aids don't keep the end of the bargain?
I hear you with that. I'm going to go back to the phone lines. Let me go to Mbalentle in Four Ways. Hello, Mbalentle.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks, and you, Mama. Go ahead.
I'm going to try to keep it short, but mine is a little bit of a long story.
Yeah.
So I was insured with like one of the leading insurance companies like in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is I had been with them like since 2018. And I remember when I went to their offices and I met with the broker and I disclosed everything because I wanted to be covered, you know. And I'm HIV positive, so I was not in any way ashamed of disclosing all my illness that I've had in the past.
Valente, can I just ask something, my darling? I want to hear your story quite clearly. Can I ask that we find you just a bit of a clearer signal, just to move around for us, and then you'll come back and then you get to share your experience. But I want to give justice to what you have to say. In the meantime, let me go to Brian in Springs. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I just want to say people have to take note of maybe the contract that you're signed for. Medical aid schemes make it very clear that you are covered for this and you are not covered for that. So you should pay attention whenever you join a medical aid. You pay attention to those details.
Yeah.
For example, me, I've joined Bonitas MEF, but it's the lowest premium they had. So yeah, I chose it because it was the one I could afford. I said, no, give me this one. They said, but you must know that you are not covered for this. Example, I'm not covered for the dentist, you see. So in order for me to go to the dentist, I pay for myself. But you can consult the general practitioners. Yeah, you can go to the surgery, to the doctors, actually. Unlimited consultations. Again, you should know you cannot see specialists. They make it clear you cannot go to the optometry. Oh, they cover the optometry. You can go once in 2 years.
Sure.
They make those things clear. So going back to the lady that was talking about her child, I don't think it's the fault of the medical aid scheme to not cover the child. Probably they did explain in some manner that, okay, we cannot cover for this, you see.
Let's go there then, Brian, as you're mentioning. Mashani, when you got the diagnosis for your son, when you got the diagnosis for your son, was there any form of explanation to you that they don't cover this? Or did the medical aid, as per the primary medical benefits, did they say this actually is or falls part of their jurisdiction of cover?
So this is one of the biggest reasons why I am involved with Rare Diseases South Africa. They've been exceptionally helpful. So Zachary's medical condition, MPS2, is a confirmed PMD condition. Mm. Therefore, the medical aid do have an obligation to pay for his treatment. So I am in no way saying, you know, taking on the medical aid because there is no obligation. We are taking on the medical aid because there is an obligation. Every other case that Rare Diseases have handled with this condition, they've won because it is a confirmed PMB condition. So
I just don't understand. Why did they say no? Like, I'm sorry. I know that I sound, but like, why did they say, if they know that they're supposed to cover it, if they know that it's part of the cover, why do you say no then?
So, and Kelly would be able to explain this much more clearly and in the correct terms. But basically, for me, you know, they keep using various different reasons. At the end of the day, for me, it comes down to the fact that they're just, it affects their bottom line, and they therefore are not willing to come to the party because of that.
So they're looking at it from a business perspective. You're going to be too expensive, therefore, sorry, we can't cover you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And when you challenge it, have they come to the pot or have they been forthcoming with information as to why?
No. So they do come back in the sense of saying the most recent or the most common explanation is that they don't cover biological treatments because obviously it's an enzyme that you're replacing within the body. But this is also not an experimental treatment. It is a proven treatment. It's been the treatment for this condition for many, 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 many years. It's not a cure. But for example, my son can go from living 10 to 18 years to living 60 to 70 years and living a fairly normal life on this treatment. It's not a cure, but it will change his life. He will live. At this point with our treatment, he will suffer an extremely painful and an extremely long, dragged out death because medical aid is just, they just do not want to just you know, pay for that. And I know it's expensive. His treatment is 185,000 rand a month. It's expensive. I know that, which is why I can't afford it. But it's been proven a PMB condition. So there is an obligation. And Kelly would be able to explain that to you in a bit more detail as well.
Yeah. And we're going to get into this as well, Mashani, because we managed to find So as I said to you, the Medical Aid Schemes Council has not responded to our request to actually have this conversation with them. But what we did do is we managed to find a medical aid scheme sector broker, Mlungisi Zondi, who's going to clarify for us in terms of just the primary medical benefits. What exactly is covered? And if I'm under, if it's PMB, and according to PMB, you're receiving the cover, what exactly are the terms and conditions that has been attached to this cover? Mlungisi, I thank you so much for availing yourself this afternoon. We've got about a minute and a half or so before we go to the news, but maybe you can kick it off and then we'll continue after the news. When somebody, when a medical aid scheme under PMB says that we cover this illness under the PMB, what does it actually mean? And what are the conditions attached to it? Or are there conditions attached to it? Or are you just covered?
Look, good afternoon, Faith, and your guest. In general, if it's a PMB, schemes are obliged to cover in full 100%. However, there are certain conditions that are attached to that. You would find that schemes would have signed certain agreements with a certain provider or specialist that deals with that particular condition, which means that if you're going to be hospitalized, if it's not an emergency, something that planned, you are going to be hospitalized at a particular date, you don't have to be taken as an emergency and all that, you will then be obliged to then get, use that one of their network specialists or surgeon or things like those, or a particular hospital, because of the option that you are on as the premiums that you are paying and the like, right? Now, however, if you then choose not to use or utilize the services of a provider that is within their network, they have a right not to pay that bill in full.
Hold on, Mlungisi, we're going to continue after the news.
Power Lunch with Faith Mangope, weekdays 12 to 3 p.m. on Power 98.7.
Now we are talking. Let's continue with conversing about medical aid schemes. Do you know what exactly you are covered for? In the case of an illness, in the case of a disease, in the case of, heaven forbid, any form of mishap or accident that should happen to you, do you know that you, even under PMB, that illness is actually listed there and that you actually have got the cover for that? Or are you paying premiums without understanding that one day the medical aid can say, sorry, we do not actually cover, even though you pay every single month? That has unfortunately been an experience of Mishani debate of some of you who've called in on 0861987000. Now we're trying to find what is the solution to all of this. Because if I'm paying my premiums every month and yet at the same time I'm not able to claim from the very same premiums I'm paying, then what's the point of paying in the first place? More than anything else, what is the overall impact that this has got on just the public healthcare system? Because now it's taking private healthcare patients or patients that have gone to, would have gone to private healthcare, and now they're further putting in a cog and saturating the public healthcare system. So do you know what you're covered for? Mlungisi Zondi is still with us here, broker, medical aid scheme sector, who's just joined in. Aluwani Manenze, president of OTASA. Kelly Duplessis, founder and CEO of our patient advisory group, and that is speaking about rare diseases South Africa. And then Mishani Devet, Zachary's mother, who's just been articulating her experiences with medical aids, not wanting to cover an illness even under PMB. So Mlungisi, help us understand here. If an illness is under PMB and it should be covered in full, as per Mishani's point, and yet the medical aid is refusing to pay, even though they're refusing to pay, not even about you need to go to the specialist, they are just refusing to pay. Why would a medical aid actually do that, especially if it's under PMB?
Okay. Based on experience, Faith, in that regard, one does not have the facts of what, I don't have the facts in front of me, but just in general, what I've seen happening in this particular situation is that some schemes, is true, I think I heard one of the guests there saying that they just refuse for the sake of looking at their balance sheet, you know. So in that regard, obviously, if that condition is listed as a PMB, the patient has the right then to take the matter up through the Council of Medical Schemes as a complaint and all that sort of thing. Obviously, if they should do that, if they'd exhausted all the internal, you know, allowable processes to be followed, and if that did not come up with any positive result, they should take it up with the Council of Medical Scheme. And I can guarantee you that if that is the case, actually the outcome, even though it may not be as quick as one would want it to be, there should be a positive result after involving the Council of Medicare schemes.
Yeah, but However, then that means that, but why do you have to go through all of this if I'm paying premiums per month, if it's listed under PMB, why must I go the extra mile of trying to prove that I'm worthy of receiving a care that I am paying for every single month? So does that mean that there are some, I'm not saying all of them, but there are some medical aid schemes that are just there to look after the business of medical aid instead of the people being represented by medical aid?
I would say to a certain degree, I think that could be true what you've just said, Faith, but I think also there is fault in the system there, that the Council of Medicare scheme, in terms of the penalties, or if I may use that term for a lack of a better one, are not really equitable to for the schemes, some of the schemes that actually have tend to have that kind of attitude to take that route, that they know that the outcome thereof is not going to be as severe as, you know, because if you're sitting there as a CEO of a particular scheme and you know for a fact that this is correct, but you are just frustrating the process, but then the outcome thereof, if it comes back from the Council of Scheme to say you as a scheme were wrong or whatever, the penalty then that is attached to that is one that you would feel that it actually pinches you a little bit more. I don't think most schemes will be doing that. I think from the Council of Medical Schemes, the penalties that they impose, I don't think they are severe enough to make some of those that really just go astray deliberately so to come back on track, you know, those kind of things. So we have seen those things do happen in the market, but in general, if you follow those processes that, you know, the protocols within the scheme and all that, the PMDBs and all that, that eliminates the possibilities of the scheme ultimately saying no to something that they really know that this, according to the law, they should cover.
I'm going to go to Mbalentle and Forways. Mbalentle, we promised that we're going to come to you. Hi, ma'am.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and you? Go ahead.
Good. I'm going to try to keep it short. So basically, in 2020, I was covered with one of the leading health insurance in South Africa, and I was with them like 2018, and I just moved from a different plan with them because I was under my partner at that time, ex-partner, and I wanted to be on my own, you know. And what they did, so I met this financial advisor, nice guy, and he helped me out and everything, and like he closed all my conditions, right? And in 2020, I was out of the country for like a little while, and I missed a couple of payments. When I came back, I had to update my payments and just do everything, pay, and make sure that like my statement is like up to date. So I did that, right? Mm-hmm. And at that time, I couldn't go to their offices because it was like the peak of COVID at that time. Mm-hmm. And my financial advisor was like, okay, pay. I just canceled this plan because I think there was just issues that plan that was on because it had left and I was like out of the country for like 4 or 5 months. And then, so I had made all the payments and then he signed me up on a different one. But then still, when he signed me up, I thought he would handle everything since I've been with the same guy since 2018 and I thought, oh, this guy knows everything about me, so I'm safe, I'm cool. So he filled out the form out for me because he couldn't send the form to me. So let's make it simple and also didn't want to stay without cover, knowing that I have like underlying conditions and also back at the peak of COVID. So then this guy is not to add any of my conditions. He ticks no on all of them.
Sure.
And he doesn't even inform me. And I couldn't even check to see the form if everything has been ticked correctly. Yeah, end of the month, I'm going to get my medication at Dis-Chem. Go to Dis-Chem, look at my meds. And they're like, how, your medical aid is declining. I'm like, how, why? And they think they're putting you on a waiting period. And it's a waiting period. And then, so, okay, cool. I'm not worried at that time even. So I call this guy, Mbuso Advisor. Call this guy, and he's like, okay, cool, don't worry, I'll sort it out. So he says, we'll send some emails and attach information, that like the insurance should have all my information and all of that. And, I mean, I'm trusting him as my financial advisor, you know, because I've been, like, upfront and honest with him since the beginning, and he knows everything and all the illnesses that I have. And they didn't want to cover my medication. And mind you, at that time, I was paying like almost 2.5 a month. They didn't want to cover my medicine. And I got to the point where, okay, cool, I need to go back to therapy now. So I'm trying to apply for therapy, and they declined the therapy as well. So now I'm like why am I being declined a PMB, which is something that I'm entitled to? You know, so it just became the whole thing, and ended up having to take the issue with the medical health council, I think that's what it's called, and the dispute. I couldn't even attend the dispute. Everything was just lengthy, and end of the day, they didn't take my side, you know? And
they didn't take your side?
No, they didn't. And they're like, you didn't disclose the conditions. And I'm like, but what do you mean? I've been with you guys since 2018. So if I'm saying something now, if I was open in the beginning, why would I not disclose anything now? And then, yeah, basically they choose the medical aid, the medical scheme side. And I tried to fight it, and I tried, but no one wanted to fight with me at all. It was so frustrating. It was so frustrating, and I had lost like almost like I think like 20,000 paying those people to make sure that like everything's updated, that I could be put into a different plan, you know. Yeah. And the only plan that like is this guy that messed up, my financial advisor, and I called him multiple times. So like, so why didn't you try to sort out things? Why did you pick no on everything? You know all my conditions. Why would you do that? You know.
So, oh, I'm so sorry that that had to happen to you. It's just, oh, no, man. It's just, it's not okay. Then, Mlungisi, so not only do we have to look after out for medical aides that try to make a quick buck out of South Africans, now you have to look out financial advisors to make sure that what they actually say on that medical aid is actually valid. So you almost have to take everything with double check and triple check everything because it could not be in your favor.
Is so correct. That is correct, Faith, because listening to the lady as to what she has said just now, I'm not quite sure of the facts because I don't have them in front of me, but taking from what she is saying, I think I've picked up a few things there that could have gone wrong, if my assessment is correct. She says that she went, I think she was overseas, I think for about 5 months or so. When she came back, she had to pay her premiums and sort out and all that. What I'm picking up from that specific issue is that with any scheme, if you stay more than 3 months without paying your premiums, your membership auto, you know, terminates.
Mm.
If you then come back on the same scheme, and you join, or if you on your side, the way she was saying, she thought that she was continuing with you know, the same processes and all that, which that could not have been possible the way she was saying it. It means that that previous membership had terminated, so she had then to reapply. Probably she may not have been aware of that.
Yeah. So she did. She reapplied. She used the same financial advisor to reapply because she had paid off that one, and then that guy did not even tick the stuff.
That is what I'm saying, that I think between her and financial advisor, I think probably the misunderstanding that is where it comes from, because from what you say, this matter was taken up with the Cancer Medical Scheme, and it was then found in the favor of the scheme, which I can only assume that the problem started between her and her advisor, because even on the application, she's saying that it was ticked yes and all that, because when you do an application with, you know, an applicant or a member as an advisor, it's not about you, you know, disclosing, it's about the member, whether your system with the application form, but they need to go through that form before they sign it and agree to say whatever is here is what. But it would appear that he was doing that when she was not seeing and just sending. Therefore, whose signature was there? Because if there was a signature that was not of the member, then it means she wasn't aware of the things that were ticked in no when they were yes. You get it? So that's why I'm saying that this matter then needs more investigation going back between her and her advisor, because the Cancer Medical Scheme would not have sided with the scheme if those facts were done correctly and all those kind of things. I'm saying that based on experience, hence I'm saying that I don't have the facts of this specific one in front of me. However, assuming or taking from what I heard her saying, I think issues, the discrepancy seems to be between her and her advisor.
I hear you. Kelly, then what do we do?
Yeah, I was going to say, look, I 100% agree with the broker that is on the call and the advice that he's giving. You know, this is what you learn the hard way, right? It is the technicalities that you are not aware of as a layperson and the implications thereof, which is why you use the broker in the first place, is to provide you with the appropriate advice and to actually advise you. That's why they're called advisors. You know, for me, I think one of the things Council for Medical Schemes has lost their ability, exactly what the gentleman was saying. They've lost their ability for a medical aide who has saved, call it R1 million in treating a patient, to pay such a minuscule penalty that might get sanctioned against them. I mean, it's still to their favor. They aren't actually appropriately penalized by making that choice. So it's actually a cost-saving benefit for them to drag these things out through Council for Medical Schemes. And that's one of the issues that these patients, such as Mission A, are experiencing.
And we'll continue after this.
Tweet Faith at Faith Mangope and hashtag Power Lunch.
Now, we have to close this session, but believe you me, it's not going to be the last time that we have a conversation of this magnitude. And we are still going to sue a response from the Medical Aid Schemes Council, because that's how important it is. Kelly, what then does a person do should they find themselves in a situation such as Mishane, in a situation, as some of the callers have said, where you actually are finding, by unfortunately, after the fact, that what you thought you were covered for, you're actually not covered for? And even if it's under the PMB, what can we do?
So, unfortunately, the Medical Schemes Act is quite clear. And the Council for Medical Schemes is the only regulator. So you are almost forced to use that as the form of dispute resolution, which I think is one of the things that effectively needs to change. This is essentially why we started this Dear Minister of Health campaign. And I encourage all users who've listened today and who've been part of this conversation to visit that website, dearministerofhealth.org. Go and put your stories on that site. It gives us the leverage as a civil society engagement mechanism to be able to engage the minister on capacitating Council for Medical Schemes and making the necessary amendments to the Medical Schemes Act to empower consumers better. Alternatively to that, you can do what we are currently now going to try do with the Mission Aid debate with Zachary's case. And we are now launching an application in the High Court. We have already launched that application in the High Court to test if it's going to be possible to have somebody outside of Council for Medical Schemes adjudicate something of this nature, because unfortunately the reliance on counsel is simply just too lengthy and too complicated a process for it to be fit for purpose for these patients at the end of the day.
DearMinister.org.
DearMinisterofHealth.org,
and you can put your story there so that you can give the likes of yourselves leverage so that you can fight some of these battles. She's on representation.
Correct. It is. We are 100% needing South African healthcare users to band together, to find their voices, and for us collectively to be able to implement change. We cannot do it on our own. Our brokers can't do it without our support. Like, the system fails if the South Africans are not engaged users. And that's the first step to resolving the problems, is for us to become active members, to become engaged citizens, and to actually do the necessary things to be able to engage in civil society, you know, mechanisms better.
I have to thank you all. Mlungisi Zondo, Aluwani Manenze, Kelly Du Plessis, Mshene, thank you so much. For your time this afternoon, Mishane, for sharing your story around how you've been fighting this for your son, Zachary, for all of you who've participated in the conversation, for sharing your experiences with medical aid schemes as well. I do thank you. I think more than anything else, I don't know about you, but I feel like I need to go home and go and read the medical aid terms and conditions once more and make the phone call and say, exactly what am I covered for? To what extent does this cover actually give, and what does the cover give? And when it's under PMB, and is it supposed to be covering? And if not, what are the conditions of that? And how do I dispute you guys should you decide not to cover me for what you said you were going to cover for me? Isn't it sad, though, that we have to go and triple check and double check and double check? You would have thought it represents the people.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.